This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Friday night, July 11th at the Clinton Street Theater, corner of Southeast 26th and Clinton, and all proceeds will benefit
KBOO Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 11 o'clock. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, where shopping is an art, celebrating 40 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March 3rd through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com. And by the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, the Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday at midnight, as well as the monthly KBOO Movie Night. The Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast Clinton and 26th in Portland. Schedule and information at 503-238-5588 or cstpdx.com.
I'm Dee Mae Roberts, stage and studio. Today, a special hour-long show on summer Shakespeare. We'll hear about Portland Shakespeare Project's Taming of the Shrew, a modern version with a nod to Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In show in the 60s. We're listening to some of that music right now from Shrew. And then we'll travel to Ashland for a talk with actress Nell Geislinger, who's performing Kate in a Coney Island rockabilly version in Oregon Shakespeare Festival's Taming of the Shrew. And then in the second half of the show, artistic director Ty Boyce joins us from Post 5 Theater's raucous comedy, The Complete Works of William Shakespeare, abridged. And finally, artistic director Michael Godsey of Portland's longest-running Shakespeare company updates on Portland Actors Ensemble Cymbeline and The Merchant of Venice. Stay with us. This is a Shakespearean stage and studio, so stay tuned. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. With me in the studio is artistic director Michael Mendelson of Portland Shakespeare Project. Good morning.
Good morning, Dee Mae.
And with him is Dr. Daniel Pollock Pelsner, who is the new scholar in residence at the theater. Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome to stage and studio. Let's first talk about Taming of the Shrew. It's the story of a headstrong woman named Caterina and an equally headstrong man named Petruchio, who takes on a wager to tame this woman. Ultimately, the two fall in love, at least we hope so. Structurally, it's often done two different ways, either as the story of Kate and Petruchio itself, or as the original way, which is the play within a play, with a character named Christopher Sly, who's tricked into thinking he's a nobleman watching the play of Taming of the Shrew. So, Michael, you've chosen to do the play within a play version.
Correct.
And tell us your decision in going with that version.
Well, I think for me, there always needs to be sort of a learning process in what we're watching on stage. I want to come out with having changed in myself somewhat. And when I had the extraordinary opportunity to work with Bill Alexander earlier this past season in Othello, we were talking about the Taming of the Shrew and how important he felt the framing material was, the material that has Christopher Sly in it. So I went back and started looking at that, thinking, is this something that we could pull off? And I thought, yeah, this is really fascinating to me, and I have not seen it done. And I thought, what a great opportunity to incorporate both that material from the 1594 quarto of The Taming of a Shrew with Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew and see what we'd come
up with.
What's
the difference, then, between the and a?
Well, Daniel, do you want to talk to that?
This is, we could talk briefly for about 5 hours about the differences between them.
For about a minute.
Yeah, but for a minute, the Taming of a Shrew and the Taming of the Shrew are both stories about Caterina, who marries a guy who tries to tame her. What's a little bit different among a number of differences between the two plays is that in The Taming of a Shrew, this framing material, the sense that we're watching a drunk guy dressed up as a lord watching a play, comes back at the very end of the Kate and Petruchio story. So we get a chance to reflect with this onstage audience about what the meaning is of what we've seen, because we see the onstage viewers think, what have I just watched and what does it mean for my life? So I think it's really exciting that Michael has gone back to these early scripts and taken that material, because when you watch it, it's a totally different experience than just watching Kate and Petruchio's story as though that's the only reality that we're seeing.
I think it gives it a different context too, in that it's a story as opposed to, well, here is the statement that we're making about Kate and Petruchio with the play itself, as opposed to watching it and observing it and maybe thinking about it later.
That's right. And another difference with these early versions is that not only are we watching a drunk guy who's been dressed up as a lord watching this play, but part of the prank on Christopher Sly is that a lord has taken his own male page and dressed him up in drag.
Exactly.
And passed him off as Christopher Sly's wife, whom Christopher Sly welcomes and wants to go to bed with. So we're watching a guy sitting next to another guy dressed up as a wife. And then when we start to see Kate and Petruchio's drama unfold, we're sort of already thinking about husband and wife as roles that people play, mm-hmm. as costumes and acts that people take on to try out different relationships and have fun with. And Shakespeare's writing at a time, kind of like ours, when people are really rethinking what the definition of marriage should be. In Shakespeare's time, people are asking, is marriage something that the community defines, or is it something that individual couples work out?
Which we're turning back to now in our society. And I think that that's why this show, although not done too frequently in the past few years, is one of the most produced shows this year.
Well, I think also its statement too, it was during Elizabethan times that it went sort of from arranged marriages to marriages of love, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. The new notion of companionate marriage, where instead of property or continuing family as the basis of a union, it might be affection. And couples are really thinking, and there are lots of pamphlets at the time writing, what are each partner's responsibility to each other? And what do you do? What options do you have if things don't work out in your marriage? And something I love about this production is we really see Kate and Petruchio negotiating with each other to figure out what's going to work for them.
Well, and that's the taming, isn't it? That negotiation, isn't it?
It is a negotiation.
Yeah, and I think the whole thing is a negotiation.
And I think Maureen Porter, who plays Kate, and James Farmer, who plays Petruchio, they do a wonderful job throughout the play of negotiating their scenes. There's a lot of give and take. I also think that going back to what you had just mentioned to me about the notion of love being the overriding factor, we have a member of the older establishment in the play, Baptista, who says, you can only get Kate if you win her love. Oh, sorry. If you win her love, which I think is such a modern thought for such a for such an older man in the play.
Well, and let's not forget that it's a uproarious comedy too. You know,
it is.
I mean, your Taming of the Shrew, Michael. Your direction of it begins in modern times.
Correct.
And then the play within the play, with Kate and Petruchio, set in the 60s.
Correct.
And it's sort of this laugh-in thing. For those who remember Rowan and Martin's laugh-in, and I saw some of the production photos, and you've got the doors, you know, the famous doors, you know, is that a chicken joke, you know,
yes,
that people
yes.
pop out of?
Yes, it has been an extraordinary journey just this past week to watch John Ellington's set, Cameron McPhee's sound, and the sound that we heard that introduced this segment is original music that he's composed for our production. Christine Crosser's lights, they have all just, and Jessica Babalot's costumes, they've all just come to the plate and really embraced the feeling of the 60s. Yeah.
Well, it also puts it in a different context. I know that with Mad Men being so hot for the last few years and its portrayal of the 60s as a way to reflect back on those times and how far we might have come and all those issues. I mean, also, you know, True is very, very funny, but it's also problematic because it's the potential and why it hadn't been done, I think, for so long, because of the potential misogyny in it.
Yes.
The idea of taming this woman. And so by setting in the 60s, you sort of address that as a bygone time, a social construct from then?
It's hard to play those moments as if they are in the 60s. I think it is just the issue of the play that we as contemporary audiences have to deal with. We did a careful cutting of the show, and some of those moments are cut out of the show, but many of them are there. And the wonderful journey with the actors was, yeah, this is what you have to say. This is what Shakespeare's asking you to do. Let's do it. And then see what happens.
And I've been wondering, to what extent is this feeling that Shrew is a problematic play more a recent reaction to the show, or actually is there evidence that the play itself is asking us to see problems, is asking us to raise questions? And one of the big pieces of evidence for that is that traditionally shrew taming, there are lots of versions of this Taming of the Shrew story in England, it's always about shutting up an outspoken woman and getting her to be quiet. And that's the final proof that she's obedient. But the Taming of the Shrew ends with Kate giving by far the longest speech of the play and holding forth in a terrific star turn that Maureen is doing wonderfully and that Nell and Ashlyn does in a phenomenal way. And so if you think that a tamed woman is a silent woman, you get a very different ending than you're expecting.
Well, my talk with Nell Geislinger later on that we'll hear in the show today is she mentions that shrew was actually applied to both men and women, much
yes.
like the bimbo, you think, is also male and female of that time. I mean, it wasn't just exclusively female.
That's
well,
a good
who
point.
Who is and, the shrew in the
exactly,
play?
Exactly.
At one point, one of Petruchio's servants says he is more shrew
than she is.
And who's really tamed, mm-hmm. right?
And one of the notions about going back to the framing material from the quarter, we get the idea that Sly has actually been the person tamed in this show because he is completely altered, maybe not completely altered, but certainly on that way of a new sense of self.
And we're getting heady here, but why not the audience?
We're
exactly. all tamed.
Our
thoughts anyway, our thoughts about thinking about, you know, relationships perhaps.
Exactly. And that is what I want the audience to hopefully leave with, that can I be different in my relationship to find peace and harmony and a good life, as Petruchio says, that this is what it bodes. I hope that's what they leave with.
And a lot of laughs, too.
You're
yes. listening to Stage and Studio.
Yes.
I'm Dimay Roberts. My guests are Artistic Director Michael Mendelson and Dr. Daniel Pollock Pelsner, who is the new scholar in residence of Portland's Shakespeare Project. So I'm getting an idea, Daniel, of what you do as a scholar in residence just in this conversation. But you have a lot of conversations with folks.
I get to have a lot of conversations. I have wonderful students at Linfield, Kate McMullen and Kira Rickards, who've been consulting on the text of the show. And then I get to have a lot of great conversations with the audiences as well. We're doing pre-show talks. We have special dinners with the scholar where you can share reactions to the play and learn more about the plays in their context and in our context, too.
It's a lot of fun, too.
I
just can tell that you're very excited about it and you're very enthusiastic about
well,
the
topic.
Well,
it's a terrific season because, as you mentioned, we're pairing Taming of the Shrew with a phenomenal play that people don't know about.
Well, I was going to get to that. A companion play, sort of. I mean, it is for this season, is the Woman's Prize or The Tamer Tamed. It's a Jacobean comedy by John Fletcher, published around, 1647? But it was much earlier,
it's written about
time of Taming of the Shrew.
About 15 years after Shakespeare wrote his play, and it's amazing. It's the only sequel to a Shakespeare play not written by Shakespeare that was performed during his lifetime. And it was immensely popular, and when you see it, you can tell why. It's raunchy, it's funny, it's uproarious, and it's really thoughtful about gender roles. And here's what it does. It's a sequel play. So Petruchio's first wife has died, and Petruchio's going to get remarried to a woman named Maria. And Petruchio thinks basically he's in Shrew 2.0. He's going to tame his new wife too. But Maria says, not so fast. You are famed as a woman tamer, but now it's a woman's turn to tame you. And that's what she does. She barricades herself in her dad's house. She goes on a sex strike. She's joined with women from all over the country.
Kind of like Liz Estrada, huh?
Exactly.
Kind of.
It's drawing on Liz Estrada. And I was thinking of contemporary parallels. It's like you think you're going to see Hangover Part 2, another sort of Guys Run Wild, and you actually see Bridesmaids instead.
Oh,
it's this celebration of really funny women and their relationships, and audiences are going to love it.
Well, see, when I first heard about The Tamer Tamed, I thought it was a modern play, but then knowing that it was written shortly, I mean, you know, 15 years after the Taming of the Shrew in Shakespeare's day, it made me wonder about what men really thought about the portrayal of women at that time. And actually, I read that some men were kind of uncomfortable by that portrayal because women were very strong then. We had, you know, they had a queen, for goodness sakes, you know, who was very strong at the time.
That's right. And there are a lot of plays being written in the late 1590s and early 1610s about gender roles. Ben Jonson writes one called The Silent Women that's referenced in Fletcher's play. And what's, I think, surprising to us is that Fletcher was actually a more popular writer than Shakespeare when they were alive. Mm-hmm. And even for about 100 years afterwards, many critics thought that Fletcher was the better playwright. But when the cult of Shakespeare got started, what, you know, George Bernard Shaw calls bardolatry, and I'm as strong a worshiper as everybody else, the cult of Shakespeare is a monotheistic cult that says you shall have no other playwrights before me.
Oh, wow.
And so Fletcher dropped out of performance, and the play wasn't performed again for 200 years. But just recently, the Royal Shakespeare Company paired Taming of the Shrew with Tamer Tamed, Bagged Baggage, and Hillsborough did a really cool truncated version of the two together. And I think this is going to be probably the first time that Oregon audiences will be able to see the whole play. And when they were performed together in the Jacobean, or in the early 17th century, the Master of the Revels recorded that Taming of the Shrew was liked, but Tamer Tamed was very well liked.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So, Michael, did you know about The Tamer Tame before you started working on The Taming of the Shrew, or did this come up in research?
It came up in research. Actually, part of Portland Shakespeare Project's mission is to find shows that work in concert with one another. And Karen Rathjay, our executive director, just happened to find this play. I was not aware, for some reason, that Bag and Baggage had done it. But yay for them. Mm-hmm. And Karen brought this to our attention, and I read it and I went, oh, we have to do this. Who's going to direct it? Because I was handling Shrew. Michael Nearing, our new associate artistic director and director of education, read it and went, I'll direct it. And that set our season, and how exciting it has been since we set that.
And you're going to do this as a staged, fully staged reading, you know, with actors prepared and
rehearsed. There's hours of rehearsal that has gone into the stage.
It sounds like a lot of hours.
Hours of rehearsal that have gone, yes, exactly, have gone into the staged reading. And that will open on the 24th. Of July, which is a Wednesday night.
Yeah, I just wonder how that, you know, you say they're companion pieces. So mm-hmm. How does The Tamer Tamed add to the conversation about, I guess, the gender roles and potentially misogynistic material of Taming of the Shrew?
One of the crazy things that Tamer Tamed does is to actually claim that Kate was never tamed after all.
Yeah, there you go.
The Shrew.
There you go.
We learn that Petruchio's been having nightmares in which his first wife comes back to him and he has to hide his pants because he's afraid that she's going to wear them instead. And Maria doesn't buy Petruchio's reputation as a shrew tamer. She thinks it's just all a sort of braggadocio rap that he's gotten.
Sure.
His male myth there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a point-by-point refutation of Shakespeare. Everything that Petruchio tried to do to Kate, Maria does to him. So the play opens with Petruchio betting on his wife's obedience, and that actually he's going to get the best sex from her that night of any of the guys. And if we see Taming of the Shrew, we think, oh yes, his wife's going to win the wager for him. But then the first time we see Maria and Petruchio, she comes and says, no, I'm not playing your game. You're not going to get any sex at all from me.
Well, there's so much conversation that you can have about both those plays. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at heart, I think it opens up a lot of discussion about gender roles, about relationships, and this, you know, the whole idea of taming another person, you know, both Kate and Petruchio are very strong people who, you know, on a personal level, I don't really believe either one are, you know, just one is tamed. I think that they both learn to compromise, right, to fall in love.
I think they're both, in our particular production, I think they are both wounded people that find in one another a better way to move forward together. And I think by the end of the play, we start seeing the real Petruchio and Kate, that because the other person provides a safety net for them, they're able to blossom a little bit more with one another. And I think that that's where what we see at the end of Shrew.
And by doing it with Tamer Tamed, we're putting it back in this dialogue that was very much the way in which it was written. And I think we get away from the notion that Shrew is only saying one thing about marriage or one thing about women. It's part of this conversation, and we hope it's a conversation our audiences are going to have,
well,
too.
Well, relationships are all about negotiation, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Every day. So I love that that will bring up those conversations for your after talks and more of the discussions.
And it is very funny.
Exactly.
It is so body, Tame or Tame. It's like anything that can go in or out of your body is discussed at some point
in
the show.
And Taming of the Shrew. I mean, I think it's one of the funniest, I mean, just strictly funny comedies that doesn't have a lot of sad things happening at the same time, you know, which some of the comedies do.
Yeah,
right?
No, this is comedy.
This is pure comedy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Portland Shakespeare Project presents The Taming of the Shrew, directed by Michael Mendelsohn, and John Fletcher's The Tamer Tamed as a stage reading. Both shows are in rotating repertory at Alder Stage at Artist Repertory Theater. Performances are Wednesday through Friday at 7:30 p.m., Saturday at 2 p.m. and 7:30 p.m., and Sunday at 2 p.m. The full schedule and all of the information is available at portlandshakes.org or stageandstudio.org. And I just wanted to also say that John Fletcher's Tamer Tamed is directed by Michael Nearing. And both shows run July 10th through August 4th. And Taming of the Shrew is opening this weekend and Tamer Tamed opening July 24th. And all shows are at Artist Repertory Theaters, Alder Stage, 1515 Southwest Morrison in Portland. And for tickets, call Artist Rep Box Office at 503-241-1278. That's 241-1278. Or online at artistsrep.org. And we have all of this info plus this interview podcast if you want to hear it again at stageandstudio.org. And we have a pair of tickets to offer to either show to the fourth caller here at KBOO at 503-231-8032, 231-8032, fourth caller, a pair of tickets to either Taming of the Shrew or The Tamer Tamed at Portland Shakespeare Project. Michael Mendelsohn and Daniel Pollack-Pelsner, it was so great to talk with both of you today. And thanks for keeping up the Shakespeare during the summer. And kudos to you, Michael, for keeping this, you know, and going. I mean, you've just done incredible work, and you're already looking ahead to the next season. So good for you. Good for you. It was a pleasure to have you both here. And break legs.
Thank you.
Thank you. Up next, we'll get an actor's view on The Taming of the Shrew. Nell Geislinger is currently steaming up the stage in Oregon Shakespeare Festival's rockabilly version of The Taming of the Shrew. Every actress who takes on the role of Kate has to deal with a difficult speech at the end of the show when Kate seemingly acquiesces to her husband. The speech's final lines talk about how women could behave towards men. It goes something like this. Then veil your stomachs, for it is no boot, and place your hands below your husband's foot. Now, I talked with Nell Geislinger about this speech, about how she handles the role of Kate and the famous problem speech at the end of the show, and just who really gets tamed in the Coney Island reimagining of Padua. And here's what she said.
Well, you know, we get cast in July, the year before we start work on the play, so I had a lot of time to think and do research and talk to the director, who was incredibly generous with his time over the phone and in person when he was visiting to sit down and talk with me about his ideas and mine and accepting ideas from me. So I had a lot of time to think about it. And as I mulled it over, I realized that in order for this production to be the kind of raucous comedy and the total wonderful romance that David Ivers wanted it to be, that I was going to have to create an arc for Kate that went from a place of being really uncomfortable in her own skin and unhappy to totally comfortable with who she is in a big social setting and then behind closed doors with her husband, comfortable in her own skin and her own sexuality, and a fully realized happy woman by the end of the play. It's the most gratifying arc to play, is to go from one end of the spectrum to the other. So that's what I tried to do with this character.
When does Kate realize? I felt like in the two characters, there's almost, not an instant, but there are several instances where the attraction is very clear. I think that's a little bit different than the battle of the sexes, that there was something there to begin with. For you, when was that moment as your character?
Well, certainly it happens in the wooing scene at some point. There are a couple of different moments where I can feel that as I look over at Ted, or he stings me with some kind of witty barb, and I look over and there's a moment where I'm like, oh, we have chemistry. And I'm glad that you say that, because we were hoping that that percolates for the audience from the very first time they see each other. Even we do this, I don't think it gives too much away, we do a bit in the show where there's a long pause, there's a long silence where Petruchio and I are just looking at each other very first time we meet. And it's combative, and it's also full of chemistry and attraction to me too. So I'm hoping that comes across.
Yeah, I don't want to give it away too, because there's so many spoilers that you could give away in this. This is a very different production from, you know, staging to, you know, I was curious about the time period. Sometimes it's retro, sometimes it's, you know, you don't know if it's 50s, but then it definitely is modern. But there was a lot of playing around with the set and the characters. But there's one moment where a piece of your shirt, you know, is missing, and you both know. I think that, to me, that was the moment where you just kind of know, ah, they have more in common than they think.
Certainly, and David Ivers had that from the day I went into my audition. That was part of the concept of this play. And yeah, I don't want to give too much away, but it is a moment where something about Kate is revealed very suddenly and obviously to both Petruchio and the audience. And it's kind of I think it's a great piece of stagecraft and a really cool idea that informs their relationship from the very beginning.
So they go through this evolution, because I really feel like Petruchio also goes through this evolution too.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I like to remind people of is that in our modern context, we don't get the double entendre that's in the title that all of Shakespeare's audiences would have understood, which is that shrew, in Shakespeare's time, it was understood that the word shrew could refer to a man or to a woman. And in our modern context, we pretty much exclusively associate it with a shrewish woman, you know. And that's certainly, when I started my research on the play, I was under the impression that there was no double entendre in the title. I was really surprised to hear that. And a lot of people who come to see our production, I listen to them with other audience members arguing about, well, it was really about Petruchio getting tamed or Petruchio going through this huge transformation. It's certainly arguable that it's the taming of Petruchio, perhaps.
So. Yeah, I didn't know that about the double entendre of shrew. I mean, I know, like, the word bimbo actually was male and female, you know,
I
and
didn't
that evolved
know that too.
Wow. So let's get to, I guess, that final speech is one that I think can make or break the show. What kind of discussions did you all have in getting to that place where you got to?
Yeah, well, David Ivers really didn't want to approach the play from the end of the play and work backwards. He really put a lot of trust in me and in Ted, who plays Petruchio, and the rest of the cast, and we built the play starting from the very first scene. And he was very trusting and very patient about just letting that last speech evolve organically and not trying to, quote-unquote, solve the problem of the play from the first day of rehearsal. He did say, and I think this is kind of a great way to look at it, and hopefully if you come to see the production, you will feel the same way, that ultimately Kate's spirit and personality in our production, those things are not changed by the end of the play. Rather, she arrives in Technicolor as the fully realized woman that she probably never thought she could be. And that's because she has fallen in love with her soulmate, and she is able to assume a place of empowerment in her society. And there's a little musical surprise at the end of the play, too.
About that musical surprise, uh-huh. Do you actually play instruments?
I do.
Okay, that's all I wanted to ask.
Yeah.
I don't want to give any spoilers out, you know, because I was going, oh, is that really happening? Or is that, you know, miming? Or, you know, so that's really cool to know that, yeah. That you actually are a musician.
Yes, I am. It's one of the things I'm a total dilettante. I dabble in a lot of stuff, and that's one of the things I work on.
Oh, that's wonderful that they work that in, too. Yeah. So I was wondering if you wouldn't mind, I mean, the big line about lay my hand beneath my husband's foot, mm-hmm. That's the one, you know, that's the one that you just kind of go, ooh, what do you do with that line, right? So do you mind, like, going through Kate's, I don't know, subtext or thought process throughout that speech? Is that hard?
You know, no, I'm just trying to think of how I would go about doing that, because as the speeches, because of the way David rehearsed us into the speech, it it's different for me every night. I can tell you for certain that there is a lot of playfulness. There's a great deal of satisfaction that my Kate feels about being able to shock and surprise everybody else on stage. And again, that's true from Kate's very earliest scenes. She feels her power in that way. And by the end of the play, she's able to feel her power by, instead of living up to people's expectations, completely thwarting them. So there's a great deal of pride, playfulness, that part of her that in our production is a total rebel and, you know, a rocker chick, which I think you'll see, and is doing things for shock value. That pops out in the end of the play. There's also a great deal of seduction. You know, there are certain lines that I choose night to night to take to Petruchio, my husband, and we have a private dialogue going on behind our eyes. I think it's worthwhile mentioning that David, the director, talks a lot about the bargains that people make, private bargains that we make within relationships. I think the image that he uses is if you were peeking through the keyhole into a married couple's two people who are together, their house, and peeking through the keyhole and watching them interacting with each other when they don't think anybody is paying attention, you might be very judgmental and surprised of the way that of the patterns that they've fallen into in their behaviors towards one another. But as Petruchio says, if she and I be pleased, what's that to you? I'll also mention, if you don't mind, that Shakespeare never intended those words to be spoken by a woman. And I think it's very easy to take that last speech seriously in a modern context, in a way that Shakespeare never intended it. It was, you know, probably a 16-year-old boy standing out there telling all the women and Queen Elizabeth and everybody who was in the gallery up there, like, this is how you behave to your husband. And, you know, those kinds of words coming out of the mouth of a 16-year-old boy, that's pretty ironic and funny.
And the audience might have laughed at that speech, right?
That's what I imagine. You know, who knows for sure? But I would, certainly.
Well, it's been a total pleasure talking with you, Nell Geislinger. Thanks so much, and enjoy the rest of your season.
Thank you so much, Dime. Thank you for sitting down with me.
The Taming of the Shrew runs through November 3rd at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival and is directed by David Ivers. For more info and the festival schedule, visit osfashland.org and stageandstudio.org. You're listening to a special hour-long show on summer Shakespeare. One of the offerings this summer is more of a parody and also a tribute to the Bard's plays. It's the complete works of William Shakespeare, Abridged, where three actors attempt to perform all of Shakespeare's plays in one show. Here's a cut from Post 5 Theater's production at Milepost 5 in Portland.
Meanwhile, in ancient Rome, Julius Caesar was a much beloved tyrant. All hail Julius Caesar!
Hail, citizen!
Who was warned by a soothsayer?
Beware the Ides of March!
What? What are the Ides of March?
The 15th of March!
Why, that's today!
Joining me via phone is artistic director Ty Boyce, who's directed the complete works of Shakespeare, Abridged. Ty was originally... Ty, are you there? Hello?
Yeah.
Hi.
Hey, Dima.
I just started the interview not knowing if you were there. Ty was originally... you originally created and performed by the founding members of the... This was originally performed by the Reduced Shakespeare Company, the founding members. And did you ever see that production?
I've seen video of it. Yeah, I've enjoyed it.
Well, you've been directing Shakespeare plays at Post 5, and you'll have a Julius Caesar later in August. Why did you choose this parody to do rather than one of Shakespeare's comedies?
You know, it's something that we're really looking forward to actually doing annually, and it'll eventually be a touring show starting next year. But it's really fun for us because at Post 5, we go after the groundlings, maybe more so than the Shakespeare elitists. We're interested in finding people that have never seen Shakespeare necessarily and getting them engaged and getting them in, you know, the greatest playwright of all time's work. And so for us, this is such a fun way to engage a modern audience, with the text and then literally, you know, within the show, getting them up on stage. And so it's something that just with Post 5's mission that we found that it was something that we wanted to do often and even every year.
Well, actually, I'm glad you said that because it really is almost a Shakespeare 101. I mean, in a very funny way, where you, if you don't know that much about Shakespeare, or if you only know the titles of shows or some of the themes or some of the characters, you're going to feel at home with this. And you're going to, and the people who do know a lot about Shakespeare enjoy it greatly too, because they're very familiar with it.
Yeah, you know, and it's so much credit has to go to these playwrights, all three of them, the collaborators, and how they've actually even revised the play fairly recently to kind of update a lot of those cultural references to make it, you know, just as engaging to an audience now as it would have been when they first started working on the play, workshopping the play in the early 80s. So it's really fun that they've given us this revision, and now we have, you know, we have Twilight references. And what's great about that, too, is they give you so much freedom. I swear they deserve the sun, the moon, and stars, because they make it affordable for a theater, a smaller theater with a smaller budget like Post 5, to produce this work. And it's really fun. They give you a lot of freedom. They say right there in the beginning of the, you know, the play that, look, if our jokes don't work for you, you know, find the ones that do, the cultural references, make it about your community. And that's exactly what we want to do at Post 5, because we really are interested in and telling, you know, the works of William Shakespeare in the here and now. So,
well, you do feel like you're getting to at least hear, if not see, some of the crucial scenes out of all of the Shakespeare plays. And I have to say, the three actors in the show during opening night, Adam J. Thompson, Philip J. Burns, and Brett Wilson, all get a physical workout in the show. And they portray, I don't know, have you tried to count how many characters they portray?
No, it's way too many.
Way too many, isn't it? It's multiple characters, multiple costume changes, and they're running around all over the place. And also, I love that the Post 5 Theater has that courtyard, so you can actually use the building and the windows, and it's like an instant balcony scene. it's great to be able to use that whole space like that.
You know, and it really feels like to me, and I've never been in an Elizabethan theater, but you know, from everything that you can see from pictures and that you can, you know, read about the culture in that time, it gives us an opportunity to really kind of have that feel, you know, is how the stage is oriented, and where there's no bad seats in the house, and now you can drink beer or a glass of wine and enjoy the show, and it's just a fun way for us to get outdoors and still in a really intimate setting.
Yeah, you know? It does feel kind of Elizabethan, but a modern take to it, you know, a modern building to it. And the actors have done a lot of Shakespeare, it seems like, in their bio, but they also seem well-versed in improv. So when you say that the playwrights have given a lot of space in the play for references, for modern references, or even regional and local references, how much improv is in the show?
You know, night to night, I always encourage them to have plenty of interplay with each other, but always move the story forward, because there's this play that if you get caught up in the audience or get caught up in your own jokes, the goal is 90 intermission, but if you're not careful, it can become a 3-hour night of theater, and that's not really, I don't think, serves the play quite as well to go on and on. So yeah, I give them freedom and kind of set up some constructs about how they can do that, and we develop the characters, and it's kind of a classic clown relationship, and that there's a hierarchy to it. There's a 1, 2, and a 3, and then they kind of deal with each other, and then the task at hand with that in mind, and so it makes it really fun. Kind of Brett is the clown, you know, the bottom, the lowest man on the totem pole, and then there's, you know, Adam, who's kind of trying to push them along, but still has a certain amount of reverence for Philip, this, you know, this fake Shakespeare scholar that is revealed later on in the second act of the play. And so it makes it really fun to kind of watch them operate and interact with each other with that kind of construct. And it makes it for a really, really fun night of theater. And I hope, you know, as big as that comedy is, it's truthful at times. And ultimately, this is very much an ode to Shakespeare and his work.
Well, it's incredibly funny. But I also have to warn folks that it's also quite raunchy. And although I saw a couple of kids on opening night, maybe it's not necessarily a family show. Or maybe you might give a recommended ages, perhaps.
They went nuts on opening night. So we've since. We kind of had a little sit down Saturday and was like, okay, guys, we want to make sure that this is something that everybody can enjoy.
Oh, so you did clean it up a little bit.
I mean, you know what? I think it's a PG-13 play.
Okay.
And you know what? I think Shakespeare had a wonderful sense of humor for the common man and for everybody, and that at times it could be bawdy, but we don't want to cross too many lines.
Yeah,
we want to make sure. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't think too many lines were crossed, but a couple were, and PG-13 seems pretty reasonable to me. You know,
I'm very okay with the PG. Theater, yeah.
Well, while we have some time, I'd like to actually get a teaser on Julius Caesar, which is opening in August. So you want to tell us a little bit about that production?
It's going to be a very abridged production. I've cut 80% of the text. And I wanted to...
Hey, Ty, we're kind of losing you right now. I'm just going to go ahead and give the information. Post 5 Theater presents the complete works of William Shakespeare, abridged. It's directed by Ty Boyce. And the show runs Friday through Sunday, July 5th through August 5th. All shows are 7:30 p.m., and it's located at 850 Northeast Oregon Street in Portland, and it's also located in Post 5 Theater's Courtyard Theater, and that's 4 blocks south of the Red, Blue, and Green Max Lines. It's off of 82nd Avenue. All shows are pay what you can, and you can reserve tickets online at post5theater.org/tickets. That's post5theater.org/tickets, and I have that info at stageandstudio.org as well. And you can also check out Julius Caesar starting August 17th through September 29th at Post 5 Theater. Ty Boyce, are you still there?
I am. Can you hear me a little bit better?
Yeah, okay. So now, if you can tell us a little bit about Julius Caesar.
Okay. So it's going to be a bridge production. I've done quite a bit of conflating and reducing the drama's personae to try and fit it down to 13 actors playing multiple roles, because it's a really large cast list. It's upwards of 40 people with all the citizens and servants and conspirators and so on. So we are really interested in telling a succinct, very fast-paced take on this play. And I've heard a couple different things that were interesting to me. Somebody mentioned to me about doing Julius Caesar set in a prison, and that was interesting. I don't think I'm going to go quite that heavy-handed on the thematic. But I also don't think that would work very well in the courtyard. But, it's basically, I'm thrilled to have the cast that I have. Paul Angelo is playing Brutus. Ryan Bradshaw is my Cassius. And then I've got some other wonderful actors around Portland that are joining me. And I'm really excited to tell the story. Beyond that, we're gonna take a look at, you know, like Post 5 likes to do, the interpersonal relationships. You know, what motivates these guys to do this and to assassinate something, and how that affects an entire community of people, and how that community of people feels about that, and then how they are kind of ultimately manipulated during a pretty passionate speech.
Well, it sounds like you're still exploring a lot of concepts, but we're looking forward to Julius Caesar, and I also want to encourage people to go to Post 5 Theater's The Complete Works of William Shakespeare Abridged, because it makes for a fun night. It really does. So, Ty Boyce, thanks for chatting today, and you know, have a great summer. You know, keep up the good work.
Thanks for having me, Dina.
And I'm also going to play right now. Here's a clip from The Complete Works of William Shakespeare spoofing the Scottish play. Thanks, Ty.
We are proud to present our authentically Scottish production of Macbeth. Double, double toil and trouble.
Stay, ye imperfect Mac speaker. Tell me more.
Macbeth, Macbeth, beware Macduff. No man or woman born shall harm my bed. The Burnham would come to Dunsany. Don't you know there, laddie?
Oh, that's the great. The McWhat, McNeed, McEye, McFear.
We're closing out our look at Summer Shakespeare. That was actually Post 5 Theater's the Complete Works of William Shakespeare spoofing the Scottish play. And now we're closing out our look at Summer Shakespeare with Portland's longest running Shakespeare company. It's going strong since 1970. Portland Actors Ensemble offers 2 free summer shows, The Merchant of Venice and The Tale of Cymbeline. Joining us now is Artistic Director Michael Godsey. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
Hey there. You've started the shows around Portland Parks already, and I have to think that Merchant of Venice, or really any dramas, would be a bit of a challenge to do in the parks. What are some of the challenges of doing Merchant of Venice?
Well, there are several challenges in the play itself, of course. We've started actually doing evening shows. Historically, we were more into the comedies for the afternoon, for the families, things like that. About 9 years ago, we started our Twilight Tragedy series, and have done Othello and Macbeth and Hamlet last year to sort of bring the plays to the parks that have more mature themes, more drama, more tragedy to them. So we put those evening shows to be the more dramatic ones at the moment.
And are you setting them both, Cymbeline and Merchant of Venice? Are they both set in period style?
The Merchant of Venice is actually being done in modern Venice with modern dress and modern phones and modern mannerisms and those sorts of things. Cymbeline, however, is a completely different monster. We're going way back on that one to fairy tale land, if you will. So that's going to be two very, very different productions for people who come see both our shows this year.
Oh, you are billing it as a modern fairy tale, aren't you? Which it really kind of is, but it's, you know, it's in the vein of the true fairy tale, which has that dark, dramatic edge to it.
Yeah, Cymbeline's got it all. It's got an evil stepmother. It's got poison. It's got lost siblings. It's got people living in the woods. It's quite the trip.
You know, for a while, Cymbeline wasn't done that much. I mean, Merchant of Venice, I think, is probably more familiar with people, the tale of Shylock, and his dealing with the anti-Semitism of the day, too. I mean, that's a pretty big topic. So how is Shylock being portrayed here?
Shylock is being portrayed as a very angry man. There are a lot of problems with most of the characters when you get into Merchant of Venice. I mean, we talk about the anti-Semitism, but really, the Christians don't come off that well either. They're a mean bunch, and they spit on Shylock and his friends. And all of the characters in there kind of come off less than perfect,
and I think it's a real commentary about society's prejudices, too. I mean, from both sides. But definitely, Shylock, you know, is, I think, one of the most complex characters in Shakespeare.
Yes, and James Peck, who is portraying Shylock, it's just incredible to me to watch how he brings that character to life on the stage and how deep and textured and interesting it is. His relationship with Antonio and his daughter and with Bassanio and Tubal are just, they're fascinating. They're just fascinating to see what's driving him. And a lot of it is the response to what he's been through, what his treatment has been. So it's a really, really great performance.
Well, Cymbeline, as we were saying, is a modern fairy tale, but it really wasn't performed that much until, it seems like even more recently, there are more performances of Cymbeline, and maybe because fairy tales are sort of coming back, you know, have been coming back the last few years.
Yeah, they're it's kind of a curious thing. But Cymbeline is also being done, I believe, at OSF this year.
Yeah.
Down in Ashland. We haven't seen that one, but it was one of those ones that we haven't done for a while that just was sort of begging to come back, and we found a really great director for it in Douglas Lay. He's sort of a new guy to Portland, but has been doing theater for a long time in San Diego. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Do you want to briefly run through the story of Cymbeline? Because it's not as familiar to me as well, because I think I've only seen one production of it.
Briefly, the story of Cymbeline. Well, let's see. There's a king. He's widowed. He marries an evil queen. The evil queen wants the king's previous daughter to marry her son, who is really not the king's daughter's favorite. She secretly marries somebody else. The king says blah, 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 and kicks her out of the... and chases her away. The queen tries to poison her. Somebody says, oh, I'm not going to poison her. She runs away... ends up moving in with her long-lost brothers who were kidnapped as children. Meanwhile, her banished husband runs into some tricky Italians who try and shake his faith in his wife. Yeah, it goes crazy.
It goes all over the place. Yeah.
I
mean, there's
the
elements of Snow White in there, too, but there's nothing about the heart. For some reason, I thought there was something about cutting out her heart, but that's I'm probably mixing it up with Snow White.
It's easy to get to get them confused. But yes, if you watch Cymbeline, you will recognize elements of Snow White and Princess Bride and a bunch of other interesting type fairy tales. Interestingly, though, there aren't any real fairies. So
right. There are very few fairies in actual fairy tales.
Yeah, it's kind of strange, but yeah.
The Merchant of Venice and the fairy tale. I almost said the fairy tale of Cymbeline. The Tale of Cymbeline. All shows are open and free to all, and it's at Portland Actors Ensemble's Summer Shakespeare in the Park. And they're at different area parks. The Merchant of Venice runs weekends through July 19th at Washington Park at 7 p.m. and closes Friday, July 20th at Merrillhurst University at 6 p.m. And The Tale of Cymbeline opens Saturday, July 20th at Maryhill Museum in Goldendale, Washington at 3 p.m. Are you doing it in that Stonehenge area?
No.
Oh,
That was a special,
that was a few years ago.
Special show for Lear. It was magical.
But it's at Maryhill Museum and different parks Saturdays and Sundays through Labor Day, which is Monday, September 2nd. And there's so many different parks that you go to. It's amazing, and it's hard to keep track of for me. So for people who want to see it in their area parks or have an adventure and have a picnic someplace, you can see the park schedule and directions at PortlandActors.org, or you can also go to stageandstudio.org, where I have a link to that. And so in the time remaining, I just wanted to talk about what makes Portland Actors Ensemble keep on going, because it's been going since 1970, and it's really a tradition here in Portland. I mean, you come to expect Summer Shakespeare. Now there seems to be so much, but really the mainstay has been Portland Actors Ensemble. What has kept it going?
Well, the love of the work, the love of the audiences, the love of doing the shows. It's the same thing that got us started in 1970. Some actors got together and just wanted to do it for free for Portland audiences. Our mission hasn't changed much since then. Financially accessible classical theater for Portland audiences in a variety of environments. We've done shows many different places. We sort of settled in the parks. But yeah, our audiences keep us coming back every year. We're very excited to put on our 44th season, and we're already starting to think ahead to when we'll be 50 years old.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Have you planned out all the shows up until then?
No. We've got next season ready to go.
What's going on next season?
Next season, the big announcement here on KBOO.
Yeah.
Is, Antony and Cleopatra will be our Twilight show. And we will be bringing back Midsummer Night's Dream as our traveling show next season.
Was that the first show that Portland Actors Ensemble did?
No, back in the day? I think it was As You Like It, if I remember correctly. But I wouldn't quote me on that.
Antony and Cleopatra. That'll be interesting in the parks. Has PAE done that before?
We have done it, but not for a very... Actually, I'm not sure if we've done it.
I don't know. I don't remember it since I've been in Portland, and it's been many, many years. So.
Yes. Yeah. If we have, it's been a very, very long time. But it's actually part of a thing you'll be hearing about a little bit later. A collaboration with a bunch of other Shakespeare
companies. Oh, you don't want to break
I'm
it
not
here,
going to give
huh?
that away yet.
Oh, come on, Michael.
I can't do it. I don't have authorization.
Don't have authorization.
That.
Wow.
You can always call the NSA. They'll tell you.
My interest is totally peaked now. But I think it's kind of interesting, too, that Portland Actors Ensemble, you rehearse, but you also have this specific way of rehearsing. And I've known through the years many actors and the whole warm-up thing and just working as an ensemble. Do you still do that ensemble building within the company?
We do. It varies a little bit between the cast. Every cast has a different personality, as anybody who's been in a show knows. But yeah, working together to warm up and get our voices ready, because as you know, our venues are a little bit challenging vocally, so it's part of that process, and really just getting together and having fun, because that's really what it's all about for us and our audiences. It's just having a really great time out in the park, enjoying some of the greatest literature in the world.
Well, Post Five Theater has that courtyard, so your voice will bounce back, But
yeah,
when
I know.
You're in an open park and you've got people going by and you've got trucks and whatever, all kinds of noise competition. So tell us about some of the vocal training that you do and the vocal work that you do with the actors, because I think it harkens back to, the earlier Shakespeare days, when it was first performed.
Long before the days of, enclosed theaters and great acoustics, which we don't expect some of the early theaters to have had, and sound with microphones and that sort of thing. It was just the actors and their voices. And it's interesting because all of our actors have probably been through the vocal training in their colleges and, you know, their acting classes and things like that. And it's one of those things where you never really think about it too much until you really have to use it. So when you talk about standing up correctly and aligning your esophagus with your mouth and your nasal passages and speaking from your diaphragm, all that stuff, you got to be thinking about it and practicing it all the time. It's really incredible as an exercise for an actor.
Well, and also just being outside, and especially if you're doing the afternoon shows, right? Because you do the shows at 3 p.m., and this is like the hottest time of the summer. Some of them, not the twilight ones, but the 3 p.m. shows, I would think, would be the most challenging.
Some of them do get warm, yes, that's true. But, you know, you can't pass up these Pacific Northwest summers. We've been elsewhere, and boy, we got it good pretty.
We do have it good, and especially since you run, you know, from July through August. That really is the best part of the summer. So
It
really is a great tradition to have in Portland, and I'm so glad that it's keeping on going.
Well, it's getting even better as we go along. We had record year last year.
And you're planning on being artistic director for the till the 50th?
Well, I don't know about that.
But we'll play it by year by year, right? Yeah. Michael Godsey of the Portland Actors Ensemble, thanks for joining me today. And have a great summer.
It's a pleasure to be back. Thank you for having me, Dime.
Well, you take care.
Thank you.
And I want to direct people back to portlandactors.org or stageandstudio.org if you want to get a complete schedule of all of Portland Actor Theater's schedule, because they're in so many different parks, so it'd be really hard to read off each one. So I encourage you to go to portlandactors.org or stageandstudio.org for the complete schedule. Before we go today, there's so much Shakespeare in Portland. I swear there's at least 8 companies here. So I've heard from a couple more, and I want to give you some information about them. 2 more Shakespeare shout-outs. Willamette Shakespeare opens Romeo and Juliet, and they do something interesting. They perform in vineyards, and they're also performing at Tabor Space later on. But here's a couple of the vineyards that they're performing at. Stoller Vineyards on August 2nd, and then it goes to Montenor Vineyards on August 9th through the 11th, and the Willamette Valley Vineyards on August 16th through the 18th, and then they close at Tabor Space in Portland on August 23rd and 24th. Now, the vineyards are completely free, so for more info, you can visit WillametteShakespeare.org. That's WillametteShakespeare.org. And you can also check out Original Practice Shakespeare, that specializes in comedic versions of Shakespeare plays, and they're performing at area parks, again, at a lot of area parks, and it's starting at Council Crest Park on June 21st and closing, they already started on June 21st, and they close at Mount Tabor Park on August 25th. Now, there's a big schedule of all the parks, and I believe they're in Laurelhurst this weekend, but you can get more info and visit them at OPS, O-P-S, for Original Practice Shakespeare, opsfest.org. That's it for this hour-long edition of Shakespeare Summer on Stage and Studio. My thanks to KABU engineer Janet Anderson for all her work today. If you missed any of the show, you can visit stageandstudio.org, and you can also download shows at iTunes, and you can hear this entire show again at stageandstudio.org or on iTunes. And don't forget to like us on the facebook.com/stage_n_studio, and tweet me at @stage_n_studio. I hope you enjoyed this hour of Shakespeare, and I hope you get out there and see some Shakespeare. It certainly is worth it. It's a lot of fun, and it really is family-oriented, so much of it. So it makes for a great summer. I mean, what would Portland summer be like without Shakespeare? So I hope you check it out. Till next time, I'm Dime Roberts.
Dr. Zahm's Stereo Obscura and A Different Nature present the film Theremin, An Electronic Odyssey for this month's KABU Night at the Clinton Street Theater. The documentary tells the story of Leon Theremin, his invention of the only instrument you play without touching it, and its use in Hollywood films and rock music. The film will be showing 7 p.m. Thursday night, July 11th, at the Clinton Street Theater, corner of Southeast 26th and Clinton, and all proceeds will benefit
KBOO Portland.
This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Oregon College of Art and Crafts Studio School, offering classes and workshops for adults in book arts, ceramics, drawing and painting, fibers, metals, photography, and wood. www.ocac.edu/register.